This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If that's really going to be his grounds, that the state law, the states can still come after him for some of his alleged misdeeds and therefore he can't say anything, then we should get like a DeSantis or some governor, you know, Greg Abbott in Texas, to go after him immediately.
What we're talking about here are tapes that were made by Joe Biden with his ghostwriter in 2016, 2017. To make an $8 million book advance.
A lot of these people that don't agree with either option or one or the other option have, you know, been co-sponsors and act like they support this legislation.
Okay, yeah, you obviously know what we're going to talk about. Fauci got dragged in front of the Senate today to answer some questions. He didn't answer any questions. In fact, he did this a lot.
Therefore, although it pains me to do so, because of the respect I have for the legislative branch of government and my decades-long record of cooperating with Congress, under the advice of my attorneys, I will invoke my right under the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution to refrain from answering your questions. Thank you.
111 times. I'm not kidding. Have you seen the clips? How many times did he invoke the fifth? 111 times. My producer, Matt, did the math on that. 111 times, okay? But that's funny because remember the pardon. I know you remember the pardon. We've talked about it. Joe Biden or the auto pen. Not just they didn't just pardon Fauci. Remember how broad it was? 10 years? What were you doing for the last 10 years? That you needed a presidential pardon on the way out the door. Now, that brings us back to this whole Fifth Amendment thing. The whole being lawyered up thing. I mean, he was so lawyered up, and the lawyers were so disruptive, they kicked him out.
The chairman has denied your assertion of privilege and directed you to answer, but you nonetheless refuse and stand on privilege despite the existence of the pardon. The committee will have to consider after this hearing what appropriate action should be taken against you for the failure to testify after being directed to do so. It's against the law to obstruct an investigation of Congress. There will be repercussions to your refusal to testify today. Senator Peters, you're not recognized. You're not recognized. If you are unruly, you will be removed from the proceeding. You are not recognized, and you are not recognized, sir. Sir, you are not recognized. You are not recognized. Security, would you behave this way in a courtroom? No, because the judge would put you in jail. I can't do that today, but I can have you escorted from the premises. So I would say, sir, sit quietly and don't say another word. I said, sit quietly. You are not recognized. Another word and you're gone. He is not recognized by the committee or the chair. If he speaks again, he will be removed from the room. This testimony is from Anthony Fauci. This is not a game with his lawyers. He can advise. His lawyers can give him advice. He's got a half dozen here. They're all allowed to talk to him.
Yes.
All right?
Yes.
But the attorneys are not recognized. In fact, the attorney was told not to sit at the table, and he's not obeying that recommendation. There's a row behind you, sir. That's where you were told to sit, and you're not. And now you're disrupting the proceedings. And so, look, this is the way Anthony Fauci wants to be remembered, for a lawyer not listening to the rules. That's the way you want to be remembered, and that's what you're going to do. You are not recognized, sir. Security, please remove him from the room. Let the record state that Dr. Fauci will still have the advice of the other half a dozen attorneys that he brought along today.
Why so many lawyers? Half dozen. Why the Fifth Amendment? The lawyers didn't just show up, as you just saw, too. Why are they causing such a big stink? It doesn't make sense, right? You have the pardon. Dr. Fauci, because of the pardon, you know, these presidential pardons, as much as I hate them, they're pretty ironclad. Why not sit down? You're cloaked in protection. Why not sit down and just answer everything? You risk being in contempt of Congress. Well, I'm going to tell you why. And I think it's going to make you feel a lot better. Because I know after today, a lot of us who are a bit jaded, myself included, we've said things like, well, Fauci's not going to prison. The pardon, he's not going to prison. No one ever goes to prison. Okay, that's fair. That's fair. I don't think he is either. Maybe he is. I don't think so. But that diary, we've been talking about it for 2 days now. That diary, what really stood out to you about Dr. Fauci reading that diary? Of course, the dishonesty and hypocrisy and all those other things, but the love of fame, the love of the limelight, the love of the adoration of the crowd. He was obsessed with it. Look at my magazine cover. Look at my bobblehead doll. I'm the most famous person in the world. I would argue this. For Dr. Fauci, becoming some kind of a world hero was the greatest moment of his life and is probably up there, if not at the very tip top, of the most important things in his life now. So, if he now has to sit there and look like lying scum and be humiliated and take the fifth, if the bloom is really off of that rose, no, it's not prison. No, it's not justice. It's not what you deserve. It's not nothing either. I think Dr. Fauci and the destruction of his reputation, I think this is one of, if not the worst days of his life. I mean, look, did you see how he opened the thing talking to Rand Paul?
However, given Senator Paul's obvious obsession with calling for my prosecution, his repeated slanderous comments about me, and recently his publicly releasing my unredacted personal diary aimed at embarrassing and intimidating me, the only conclusion I can reach is that the sole reason he is calling me before this committee is to get me to say something, anything, that could vindicate his repeated public pledges that I end up, in his words, quote, behind bars, unquote. Any reasonable person who has followed his unhinged obsession with me would readily come to the same conclusion.
What do you think he said about Rand Paul, the diary, all these questions? What do you think he said behind closed doors? It's not nothing. It's not justice, no, but it's not nothing. He's angry, wounded. Everything he ever wanted, the fame, is disappearing before his eyes. Now, of course, look, Democrats were there. And because they were the most willing participants in all this lie, all these lies, all this destruction, they had to do the best they could do to polish that turd.
Put aside all the flowery rhetoric that we hear in the United States Senate, Dr. Fauci has saved lives, as have public health officials in the United States and throughout the world. And today, we are demeaning and degrading their life-saving service.
They're just robots. He doesn't mean anything by that. He understands that those are the talking points the system has given him. Doesn't mean anything. Public health, that doesn't mean anything either. But they have to try to protect the world of make-believe. They trapped so many people in, they did so much damage. Let's ask Megyn Kelly what she thought about today. Joining me now, the wonderful Megyn Kelly. She doesn't really need any introduction, but I suppose I might as well list all the things. She's a journalist. She is the Megyn Kelly Channel. She's also my friend, most importantly. Megyn, the Fifth Amendment. Now, I'm not a lawyer. You're one of these fancy educated types. I was under the impression that once you were given a pardon, that you can't do that anymore. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. He's out on thin ice over this one. It's the same thing as being given immunity. This is probably more familiar to most people in court, you know, where the prosecution cuts a deal with somebody, like the accomplice. They say, we'll give you immunity from charges, but you got to testify. That person can't get on the stand and refuse to answer questions because they've got their Fifth Amendment worries about being incriminated. They've waived all that and they've been given an immunity deal, and now they have to give up the goods. Because that threat of criminal prosecution has been removed for the acts that you've been given immunity for. That's what a pardon is. That's what a pardon does for Anthony Fauci. So there's a whole host of things that he absolutely does have to answer questions on. And I do think he's on thin ice, and he's probably going to be found in contempt and be sent back in there at some point. The only out he's got, Jesse, is to say, well, even though Biden gave me a pardon for all federal crimes, he didn't give me a pardon under state laws because he can't as the president. But you can't be prosecuted for state law violations for your acts in your capacity as a federal employee. So he's really not subject to jeopardy under state laws. And by the way, Mike Davis was saying this on my show earlier, and I totally agree with this. Article 3 Project founder, you know, right wing conservative shit stirrer in a great way. He was saying, if that's really going to be his grounds, that the states can still come after him for some of his alleged misdeeds and therefore he can't say anything, then we should get like a DeSantis or some governor, you know, Greg Abbott in Texas, to go after him immediately, file criminal charges. If that's what he's going to say, the states can still come after me, we should have criminal charges filed against him immediately by those red state governors, their attorneys general. And when Fauci then defends those criminal charges by saying, I was a federal employee, you can't come after me under state law, then Rand Paul's case to make him speak gets 10 times better. But either way, this guy's up against it and he's trying to pull a fast one, and we're on to him.
Megan, if you, I mean, obviously sounds like the states are not going to be able legally to give us any joy here. So the best we can maybe hope for, I'm assuming, is he has to go to a cage for being in contempt of Congress. And I know it's not everything we want, but what is that, Megan? Is that a couple months in the joint? Is that wearing an ankle monitor? What is that?
Yeah, it won't be much. I mean, yeah, if you get the Peter Navarro or Steve Bannon treatment, you go in for a few months, 4 months, maybe. And then you get out, and, you know, unfortunately, it can have the effect of making you a martyr, somewhat of a hero to your, you know, leftist fans. I'd much rather see this guy forced to answer the questions. I really want his humiliation. I want to hear him answer the questions. Why did you say in your notes it didn't come from a wet market one day, and then the next day went on the air and said, it probably came from a wet market? Why did you do that? Why, the day you found out that post having two shots of the Moderna vaccine, that you had a pulmonary infarction in your lung, why did you tell that black man in Washington, D.C., who was reluctant to take the vaccine, that his concerns were completely unfounded and he should listen to you about the safety of the vaccine? Why did you do that? There's so many contradictions. Forget the vainglorious stuff, which is so unattractive and disgusting. I've never seen somebody who's more in love with themselves than Anthony Fauci. But that's just color. The stuff that I really want to hear him answer for is the lies, the blatant lies. And it's such an easy cross-examination that he wrote white in his notes. Then the next day, time after time, you see him going on the air and saying, not white, anything but white. But then behind the scenes again, white. But then back out, it's so clear. So that's what I want to see him. I want to see somebody turn the screws and make him answer some of those very good questions we heard asked today.
Megan, I don't need any more help, and I'm sure most people watching don't need any more help to hate that little bridge troll. Be that as it may, he never gets to do these evil things without a media that, I'm to say they covered for him would be way underselling it, lionizing the guy, the hero. Journalism, as much as it pains me to say it, is really, really important to protect the people of a country. And our media just is complicit in all the bad stuff. Where do we go from here?
It was so bad. They didn't just blow it. You know, it wasn't like a good faith mistake. They blew it. They got it wrong. That happens. It was a decision to get on board with this guy, to lionize him, to shame anyone who raised questions about him, and facilitate his strong arming of the country into very dangerous behaviors. I mean, you see him in that one tape walking around the same day with that DC constituent I was just talking about, where he then says, you know, these Republicans, they don't like to be told what to do. We're going to have to break them. That's, he said that on camera. And what he meant was fire the military guys who won't take the vax, fire the nurses who won't take the vax, ban kids from schools and colleges, young teenage men who were the most vulnerable to things like myocarditis, which is a heart infection that can kill you and did kill some of our best and brightest young men. Those are the ones Anthony Fauci had to break because they didn't like to be told what to do. And the media, rather than seeing, wait, this is very controversial, this guy is a potential villain, at least to half the country, to have the ability to at least say, I might love him, but he's controversial and half the country is going to hate him. They didn't. They got on board with defending him and protecting him. Look at Jake Tapper. All right, CNN was the face of the pandemic. Chris Cuomo every night calling out Scott Atlas, who was right about everything, calling out Scott, how dare you? You literally would know more if you slept in a Holiday Inn last night, he said. Oh my God, where's his apology? Not to mention his fake performance of emerging from his basement when we knew from the New York Post he'd been out riding his bike. He was fine. But then look down the lineup to Jake Tapper. 10 days after, no, let me get this straight. Anthony Fauci in November said, no Thanksgiving. You do not have Thanksgiving with your family and friends. No gathering. It's not safe. And 9 days after that, he had dinner with Jake Tapper and his wife at Jake's home. So one of two he had over the next 4 or 5 months. Why are they allowed to gather? He can gather with a media representative and get stroked over and over, to put it in the PG terms. But you and I, we can't meet with our grandmas and have a meal. That's a no. Or forget the elderly. We can't meet with our children and have like an aunt or a friend come join us on Thanksgiving. That's too much. But Anthony Fauci has the magical powers that the BLM protesters had. Remember, they were allowed to do it because of a public health emergency, that the COVID virus would magically skip over them because they were there for a good cause. Or those who were sad about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, they would be allowed to go out and mourn her because the virus had these magical powers. But in any event, the media was complicit in all of it. They pushed and amplified the lies at every turn.
Megan, is he a sociopath? And I ask this as somebody who doesn't have feelings either, and I'm extremely narcissistic. But when you look, when you read the diary, it's so malevolent, Megan. It's so in your face. It's not a whoopsie. It's not a mistake. Just going to the public repeatedly and telling them things you know to be untrue that are hurting and ruining and ending their lives in some cases is so evil. I mean, that's what it is. It's evil. And he's not sorry.
No, he's not sorry at all. I'm just going to pull this up because I just had somebody send this to me again, because it's just so remarkable the way he talked about himself. Big front page article about me appeared in the Washington Post. Very flattering. My national and international fame is explosive and really unimaginable. It is not hyperbole to say that today I am the most famous and talked about person in the country and one of the most recognizable persons in the world. I don't even, like, I'll guarantee you that Leonardo DiCaprio has never written such a thing about himself. I'll bet you Trump has never written such a thing about himself. There's something wrong with this guy. It's like he's got the short man syndrome where he needs to prove himself. He was obviously extremely scared that he was going to get outed for having funded gain of function research in the Wuhan lab. He knew better than anyone that's where this virus came from. At every turn, he tried to shame and silence any virologist who said the same, including those who worked for him, where he gathered 12 of them shortly after the pandemic broke out. And all of them, 10 out of 12, said, this came from a lab, Tony. This thing's got a furin cleavage site that's tough to find in natural origin. That looks man-made. And within 24 hours, he had flipped them all to, it came from an animal. And you're racist if it came from a lab leak. A few months later, Some of those same virologists magically started getting multi-million dollar grants from NIH properties controlled ultimately by Anthony Fauci. He was scared that he was going to be outed, I believe, as the cause of the entire pandemic. I believe he's got every single person who died's blood on his hands, and it caused him to do extraordinarily nefarious things. So I don't know if he's a sociopath, because I think he felt scared and guilt and fear, you know, that he was going to get caught for that. And it led to him lying, misleading. And then he came up with this new narrative where he was the hero and he would control people's lives and try to get them to bend to his will. So is that a sociopath, or is that just a sad, scared little man who found an alternate narrative that worked better for his teeny tiny ego?
Yeah, it's because he's short. I'm telling you, you can't trust these people. Megan, as always, thank you. I appreciate you. Come back soon. You're the best. He is short. Oh, sorry. You've met these people before. They're like that. I want you to switch to Pure Talk. I want you to dump that big wireless company that's charging you way too much. And I want you to switch to Pure Talk. When you do, you'll speak to an American who speaks English. You'll be giving less money, a fraction of the cost of the big guys. You'll be giving money to the company that's run by a guy who did two tours in Vietnam. They're not going to fund pride parades or Black Lives Matter or Planned Parenthood. Switch. Go to puretalk.com/JesseTV and make the switch. We'll be back.
I was going to ask you something else. Oh, gosh. I can't think what it is. And then next thing I have here is... this is classified. It's all of it. It goes to the 17th. So this was high early on. In 09, I just found all the classified stuff downstairs. Some of this may be classified, so be careful with
okay.
it. I'm not sure. It's not more classified. But.
That doesn't sound good. But I think Jeffrey Clark probably knows a little more about this than I do. Joining me now, the VP of litigation at the Wonderful Oversight Project, former double assistant attorney general at the USDOJ. Okay, Jeffrey, that sounds really bad. Hey, hang on. Let me grab my classified stuff. But before we even get into that, why do we have this? Why am I finally able to listen to this?
You're finally able to listen to this, Jesse, because the Oversight Project fought a 2-year battle to get it. We filed a Freedom of Information Act request in 2024, and the Biden Justice Department fought it tooth and nail. They came up with ridiculous rationales, like the clips you just played, right? Do you hear any personal family private issues in there? No, that was all just a fake and a canard to try to just keep this from coming out. So finally, we won in front of District Court Judge Dabney Friedrich in D.C. And then Joe Biden rushed in to intervene, in our view, years late. But he was allowed to intervene. He then took an appeal up to the D.C. Circuit, and we won that appeal 2-1. The most recent shoe to drop is that Joe Biden threw in the towel and said, I'm not going to try to go to the U.S. Supreme Court. I'm just going to lump this loss. So that's why you're able to hear it, Jesse.
All right, now let's get to the nitty gritty of it, the contents of it. Hold on. Let me go grab my classified material. Sounds like a crime.
It is. It is a crime. And it's far more of a crime than they were trying to accuse President Trump of. Under Jack Smith, right? He was president. And in my view, when he took documents with him, he declassified them by course of conduct. But what we're talking about here are tapes that were made by Joe Biden with his ghostwriter in 2016, 2017 to make an $8 million book advance. And he did it back at a time, and he had the documents from back when he was senator and back from when he was vice president. He didn't have any declassification power. So he admits on tape to violations of the Espionage Act. And if you listen to the, everything and you really, you have the transcript in front of you and you look at why they're redacting certain materials, which on the tapes just come across as long, you know, parts of dead air, you can see that they're withholding it, you know, various agencies like the CIA, because these things are classified. So it's remarkable then to think about Robert Hur, which is the next real topic. How did this guy give Joe Biden a free pass? I find it, you know, gobsmacking and ridiculous that he gave Joe Biden a free pass for this. We know he did because he basically said that he was senile. And there are elements of senility here, but I still think that, you know, he expressed clear knowledge of the fact that he illegally had classified information, and that is a crime.
Well, Donald Trump was prosecuted for that. I mean, they went after, they raided Mar-a-Lago for that. So, look, yes. Are we waiting now on an FBI raid of the Biden residence? Where can this go from here? I'm not asking you to predict the future, but if he committed a crime, is he in trouble?
He should be, Jesse, because, look, what a special counsel does is not binding. It doesn't, you know, bind a future attorney general. It doesn't bind a future president. And the president is the one who's in charge of the Justice Department. And I think there should be an immediate reinvestigation of these matters with Joe Biden, and they should look at bringing him up on these crimes. Fair is fair. And if President Trump had to defend himself against, I think, ridiculous arguments that there was a crime, and I also would advise that they just do this using the base level Justice Department, not some kind of special counsel mechanism, which is Jack Smith got booted out down in Florida because the judge found his office was unconstitutional. They can just, you know, the acting attorney general or a U.S. Attorney can bring a criminal suit against President Biden here for what he did when he was not president, when he was a senator, and when he was vice president. And I think that should be looked at and studied really, really hard.
Jeff, let me ask you this, because obviously the Fauci stuff is all over the news. I have no doubt you've been drowning in this stuff the same way everyone else has. And being perfectly honest about my personal bias, I want to see somebody locked in a cage for what they did to this country. But I understand presidential pardons are what they are. Is he fine legally?
In order to pierce through that, Jesse, I think there'd be a need to be a very committed legal effort to go after him and to establish that if Joe Biden didn't give this pardon, then, which is quite possible because we know he had an auto pen presidency, and who brought out the fact that he was running an auto pen presidency, that's also the oversight project in what President Trump called the scandal of the century. And so if Joe Biden wasn't the one who really, you know, issued the pardon, then I don't think it's a valid pardon. Alternatively, even if, you know, someone bounced something off him one day when he's this, you know, forgetful person in various stages of senility, he might not have been competent to authorize the pardon. And I think that should be examined. And look, if it is probed on, and if the courts come back, including up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and they say, look, we're not going to allow pardons to be probed to sort of get behind them to see exactly how they were issued. We're just going to assume in all cases that they're valid. Well, if that's the law, then sadly, you know, Anthony Fauci is protected. But I think that the effort to establish that he did not get a valid pardon should be mounted anyway, because the law on that should be clarified.
Let's switch gears again on you here. Donald Trump has asked the Supreme Court to look at the post office, looking over elections. What does he want? What's he trying to get? What's the opposition to it?
He's trying to get the fact that we have various data sources about who are not citizens in the United States. And so if people are doing mail-in ballots who are not citizens in the United States, they're voting illegally. And by using special envelopes and special procedures, President Trump has instructed the post office to try to weed out people who are doing that, right? And we just, you know, had a scandal last week where Governor Mikey Sherrill of New Jersey had to admit that she had 6,000 illegal aliens registered to vote. She claimed it was a software glitch, but the software company said, like, we were told to put these people on here. So, of course, it's rational to want to enforce the law by not allowing illegal aliens to vote. And so we have a, you know, a wild judge in Massachusetts, and she has tried to block President Trump's executive order on using the post office to weed out people who are illegal voters and illegal aliens. And I think that's eventually going to get reversed. And so Trump's Solicitor General, John Sauer, has taken that case to the Supreme Court. He's asking them to put a hold on it.
Is there anything else we should be doing? Obviously, the SAVE Act, I know that. But prior to November, to try to cut down on the, how can I be diplomatic about this, election integrity issues, especially in blue areas, Madison, Wisconsin, California as a whole, what else can we be doing besides this stuff?
Look, you know, I know various people like Steve Stern, you know, run a precinct strategy. You know, other people like my friend Cleta Mitchell, you know, she works with local voting authorities, you know, and party officials to make sure that the votes get monitored. We can't have another situation, Jesse, like we did on the evening of in November in the 2020 election, where in the Georgia Convention Center, they threw out all of the observers and then they resumed counting in the middle of the night. We have to make sure that people sign up for and they help as observers to make sure that everything gets documented, because if something happens in blindness, in silence, that's when the shenanigans happen.
Jeff, thank you for what you're doing, my man. I had no doubt you were going to succeed. I appreciate you very much. Thanks for all you do. He's a good man right there. Lucky to have him on our side. All right, Ashley Bracefield joins us next. Before we get to Ashley, let me get to you. Let me tell you something. I was never a supplement guy. Just was never my thing. Maybe some Flintstone vitamins from mom when I was a kid, but I've never been a supplement guy. During COVID, I got to know the boys, the anti-communists at Chalk. And the more we talk, the more they express to me, Jesse, you have to be proactive these days. There's so many estrogens in the water, and it's just so bad. You have to be proactive, and you will feel it. It'll be palpable. Okay. Let me try it. I approached it that way. Oh, my gosh, I'm never stopping. Over 4 years now, I've been taking a male vitality stack from Chalk every single morning. It's completely changed my life. They have female vitality stacks for the ladies. I'm telling you. No needles, no medicines, natural herbal supplements. Going to turn your life around. Go to chalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Well, we have ourselves an interesting situation here. And by interesting, I mean totally crappy, if I have to be honest with you. Donald Trump wants the SAVE Act. You want SAVE Act. I want SAVE Act. But we need it to get through the allegedly GOP Senate. And they don't want to pass the SAVE Act. What's going on behind the scenes? Well, if you want to know stuff like that, you got to talk to Ashley about it. Joining me now, Ashley Bracefield, senior politics reporter for the wonderful Daily Caller. Okay, Ashley, is this just wishful thinking? I don't want to wake up every morning and pray the SAVE Act is going to pass. Are we just basically screwed?
That's a great question. I think I wake up every day asking that question and asking members of Congress that same question, frankly. We are at a state that, you know, we've had members for about a year now passing this piece of or trying to get this piece of legislation passed, rather, I'd say. And it's been stalled. And there's been so many things put forward, whether it be putting it in reconciliation, the talking filibuster, nuking the filibuster even. And no one can agree on anything, it feels. And so we've seen, you know, the tension rising between the Senate Majority Leader on this issue, along with the president. People like Senator Mike Lee have been huge proponents on this. The House Freedom Caucus kind of leaning on more of the side of Mike Lee as well, pushing this issue. So the question is, I guess, like you said, are we screwed here going into midterms? And we're about 100 days out now. So can this thing get passed? I'm not quite sure. It would require, with the talking filibuster option, for Senate Majority Leader John Thune to basically be the guy that's going to push this forward. And we wrote a piece on this talking about Lyndon B. Johnson with the Voting Rights Act and what they did there. And, you know, there's a lot of discrepancy that we've seen from the Senate Majority Leader. He went on Sean Hannity's show talking about we don't have the votes, that actual, you know, time that they used the talking filibuster in the history of the Senate, that he was acting like that wasn't the same option they would have here. And The Daily Caller broke it all down and kind of gave you the idea of how they would do it. And we spoke to Senator Mike Lee, who's been the proponent on this. And now Senator Mike Lee has actually come around to say, you know, he'd be open to putting this thing in reconciliation. And ironically, the one person that was really pushing putting it there was Senator Lindsey Graham. And as we know, he passed away several weeks ago. So I think it puts this legislation in a position to say, you know, can this thing go forward without him there pushing it to be put in reconciliation?
Okay, so I have to ask a nerdy political detail thing, but that's who I am. It's too bad you're just going to have to deal with it.
Okay.
They said we have to dump the filibuster to pass the SAVE Act. These senators, I've heard there are four, I've heard there are 15 who don't want to go through with this. Is their major gripe the filibuster dumping or the SAVE Act?
I think that's still a question we don't know. I mean, a lot of these people that don't agree with either option or one or the other option have, you know, been co-sponsors and act like they support this legislation. So it's filtering this idea that, oh, these senators support the idea of this legislation, but they don't support any of the strategies to pass it. So it's finding out who those names are that it's very difficult. And we heard that, you know, the White House has sat down with a group of 20 senators to see where they can lobby them on this. If they are nuking the filibuster as the option, they say, you know, if we do this, you know, when the Democrats get in power, they're going to do the same thing. Well, if the Democrats get in power, they're probably going to do the same thing. And the argument back to that. So I think it's the strategy that's the disagreement across the board here. Nobody can agree on anything. And we saw Senator Mike Lee put out the talking filibuster option, which would not require nuking the filibuster. We also see this reconciliation option. I mean, even the stock trading bill has a, you know, amendment to it saying that they wanted to add in, you know, something to do with the Save America Act. So they're trying multiple options, but the risk here is it goes to the Senate and it just gets stripped out in committee. But I also think there's an option here. I mean, the Daily Caller has done reporting on this during a Senate conference lunch with the Senate Majority Leader. He basically said that senators just hate the president. And so they categorically kept denying that was said. We have sources on the background basically confirming that. But I think the quiet part was said out loud during that lunch. And we saw the next week, the president showed up to the Senate because I don't think he was happy to see that reporting and that, you know, the senators were not willing to help him and his agenda. So reasonably so in a lot of way there, in a lot of ways there. But I mean, as we all know, this issue leans to be 80 to 90% of the base agrees with it. And it's something that the president has campaigned on for several years. I mean, this kind of stemmed from the 2020 election, a campaign promise made in 2024. So I think it is something that the president knows he has to push for due to that nature of the legislation and what the impact would have going into these midterms. But is the Senate willing to stay in and do it, or are they going to go to recess and not get any legislation passed?
Ashley, your sources are better than mine. Why do they hate the president? What is the thing that looks, the senators are a weird bunch. Everyone who's been on Capitol Hill knows it's an odd group of people. I got it. What is their axe to grind with Donald Trump specifically?
Well, I think it goes back years would be my, you know, I guess, prediction on this. I don't know the actual facts on their reasoning for this. But I mean, some of these people have been there since before Donald Trump was in office. So maybe it stems from, you know, the more, you know, baseline establishment Republican thought process that was basically in play before Donald Trump came into the Republican Party. And they know there's going to be an end time for that. It's coming in 2028 when the president's possibly not going to be able to run again, basically. And who will be the party leader at that point? So they know politics is ever changing. They're creatures of the swamp in a lot of ways. So they know they just kind of have to tag along until that time period's over so they can take back control and go with their original ways, I guess, in a lot of ways here. That's, I guess, my first prediction on this. We see this from Senator Mitch McConnell and Tom Tillis that they don't agree that this bill would not nationalize elections. So that's a problem for many of them. There's also this idea that Senator Thune would like to see a bipartisan effort with Democrats and Republicans to get these things moving forward. And we saw this with the continuing resolution that came from the House. He's obviously said that. So there is an element of this. I mean, is the leadership going to push these people, threaten these people going into midterms, or are they just waiting to sit back and let midterms happen, see what, you know, plays out there, and then, you know, kind of swipe it to the side and see what happens going in the next few years of 2028. I mean, it's a vicious cycle within the GOP and the Democrat Party and across Washington. Whenever you have an election year, it's basically, you know, get away with what you can and you just have to win the next election.
Ashley, The Mitch McConnell situation frustrates me to no end, because I've heard so many stories, many of which I'm sure you've heard as well, about senators having to be carried onto the Senate floor to make votes. These people never freaking leave and retire. It's Mitch McConnell. I mean, is he even alive? I'm assuming he is alive, but all we're getting is, well, I talked to a guy who talked to a guy who talked to Mitch McConnell. What is going on?
Yeah, we still don't know. We are getting pictures, and I don't think anybody's going to be satisfied until they see him back in Congress, reasonably so. I mean, people have speculated AI photos, old photos that have been, you know, edited to make it seem like it's current. But of course, I think that the perception here and the real concern should be, can the Senate get business done without Mitch McConnell there, who's missed over 30 votes, I believe, at this point. And he, you know, he chairs the Rules Committee, a crucial committee to get many of these votes on the floor as well. So what happens there if he's no longer in control? Who takes charge? We've looked at this. It would be Senator Ted Cruz, of course. But, you know, we keep getting updates saying he's not quite ready to come back. He's not quite ready to come back. But this question as to, you know, people in the Senate being over the age of 75 and the reliability there, and the already the factor that many of these, you know, government employees or senators don't want to work. They want to go and campaign in their districts rather than passing legislation and to move forward the president's, legacy here in a lot of ways. So, I mean, that's the thing about Mitch McConnell. He knows he's not running again this November. So there's nothing there that he has to really worry about in not putting the Save America Act. But the question as to where Mitch McConnell is, I mean, there was, you know, a ton of reporting at the time. The Daily Caller was getting multiple comments that were the same across a week period from Mitch McConnell's team. So there's been a lack of transparency there that's very concerning. And, you know, I think pushing, continuing to ask questions is the only thing you can do as a reporter in this instant. But the American people are fed up, and they want to see, you know, action take place. And that I think they're going to, you know, have a mandate for that coming in November if people don't start showing up.
Ashley, go get them. Come back soon. All right. We have lighten the mood. Before we lighten the mood, I know that high interest debt is just brutal. I know. Look, any debt sucks, but when you're paying 20% on something, 25, 30, 35, it feels like you can't ever get ahead. You're buried, you're drowning, can barely make the minimum payments, the interest payments, so you never touch the principal, and there's no way out. Hold on that. Do you have a mortgage? American Financing is the place you need to go, because they know everything when it comes to carving a path for you out of the problem you're in. And I'm warning you right now, I'm sure you think that you're some special case that they've never heard of before. They have heard it all. They have performed miracles for people. Give them a chance to help you be free of it. AmericanFinancing.net/Jesse. We'll be back. I can't end the show without playing for you what Josh Hawley did to Fauci today. And again, maybe you hate Hawley, maybe you hate Fauci. I can't stand Fauci. But watching that little troll be humiliated like this, it nourishes my soul.
Chairman, well, nothing says honesty like taking the fifth, huh, Doc? Let's try something. What day of the week is it today?
On the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer based upon my rights under the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution.
What color tie are you wearing?
On the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer based upon my rights under the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution.
What color is the carpet in front of you?
On the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer based upon my rights under the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution.
Let's just get one thing straight. You don't have any rights under the Fifth Amendment because you've been pardoned, as you very well know, as the Supreme Court has been clear for a century and more. Brown versus Walker, 1896, when he has been pardoned, he may not stand upon his privilege. You know that. Your lawyers sitting behind you now shifting nervously in their chairs, they know it. This isn't about the Constitution. This isn't about the law. This is about contempt. You had time to sit for In Style magazine. Here's what you were doing with your time. You could sit for In Style magazine But you can't answer questions for the American people. You could sit for InStyle magazine, but you're here taking the Fifth. You could sit for InStyle magazine and get $1 million in cash awards. But now the cat's got your tongue. I bet he does. I tell you what, here's my conclusion from all of this. This was really all about you the whole time. Somewhere along the way, you lost your way. You may have been a good public servant at one time. I don't know. But what I can tell you from reading your emails now, from looking at what you did, how you used your employees, somewhere along the line, it became all about you. You became a narcissist and a megalomaniac and a liar. And you've lied to the American people, and you've lied to this body. And you've disgraced your profession by doing it. You called yourself the most famous scientist in the world. You've done more to harm science than anybody in my lifetime. And I hope you'll go home and write that in your diary.
Go write it in your diary. Gives me the willies. I'll see you tomorrow.
I would thank you for coming to my YouTube channel, but I know how brilliant it is, and I know you love it here. So subscribe and watch. We're going to start really ramping things up and putting some funny stuff, some interesting stuff out there, some collaborations. Either way, my YouTube channel is officially the place to be, so stick around.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.